Reincarnated for Revenge. Chapter 101. Taken Hostage. Amidst the turmoil, several fighters had inadvertently ventured dangerously close to the adversary's lines. Ultimately, when the foes executed their self-destruction strategy, though these fighters pulled back, the visceral aftermath scattered far and wide, flesh and blood flung across the battlefield. Tragically, some were caught in this ghastly spray, among them Callum, who bore the brunt of it. Ryder's expression darkened as he remarked, "Mr. Callum, are you insinuating that?" Just then, his communication device began to chime insistently. He swiftly attended to the call, and the voice of Quintus, tinged with panic, permeated the line from the other end. "There's a dire situation. Ryder. A handful of us, about four or five, have started feeling terribly ill. Those individuals who attempted to thwart our efforts earlier, they're all carriers of the disease." Ryder was struck by an overwhelming sense of disbelief. What manner of illness could manifest so quickly and spread with such virulence? A sudden flicker of dread pierced his thoughts. K-virus. Callum spat out yet another mouthful of blood. The phrase K-virus simultaneously flashed across his consciousness. For the first time in his existence, a profound sense of fear overtook him. Should it indeed be the K-virus, the likelihood that he might never again lay eyes on Callista was agonizingly high. That departure they had recently might well have been their final goodbye. Ryder was dumbfounded by the severity of the situation. The contingent that had just departed numbered in the thousands, 2,000, to be precise. If all were to fall victim to this virus, merely to target Callum, it spoke volumes of the enemy's mercilessness, it was almost demonic in nature. What was more, the K-virus, known for being incurable, would not typically be unleashed unless there was an intent to decimate an entire nation, to obliterate the very fabric of the world. The virus, which first surfaced over two centuries ago, had claimed upward of a million lives since its emergence. When the initial outbreak struck Turlin, the global community of virus research experts converged to try to manage the situation. Despite their efforts, the virus proved unstoppable and incurably lethal, spreading swiftly and universally fatal within a month. During those despairing times, the grim recourse was to euthanize those afflicted. Their remains were incinerated in large numbers, their ashes buried deep underground. Over 100 years previously, an epidemic had devastated an entire city. Ultimately, the entire area was cordoned off under strict quarantine. The government of Turlin mandated that all residents remain indoors, effectively scaling all exits and condemning the inhabitants to a fate of isolation. To this day, that place remains deserted, now notorious as a haunted ghost town where, if one dares to visit at night, the eerie sounds of frantic knocking can still be heard. If the entire group of people was infected, this could spell the end of Lost Aria. At that moment, Callum, still able to think clearly, hastily communicated with the Listerian government, alerting them to the potential resurgence of the K-virus. The officials, upon realizing the gravity of the threat, quickly dispatched their most elite unit to tackle the virus with decisive and rapid action. Fortunately, the scene of the recent encounter had been a deserted urban area, which aided significantly in containing any potential spread of the virus. Callum remained composed as he issued another directive, this time to Gunnar, to quarantine the afflicted individuals and transport them to the military district. Though the K virus was formidable, a development had been made in the form of an antibody. If administered within the first 2 hours of infection, it offered a slim 1% chance of survival. He then relayed a detailed message back to his home nation, emphasizing the critical importance maintaining national defense measures. Of soon, the physical toll became too much for him, and beads of sweat the size of beans began to form and trickle down his forehead. Hurry back. Get to the military district. There's still a chance if we administer the antibodies now, Ryder urgently directed the pilot, who promptly executed a sharp turn. Meanwhile, Kaiser tried to speak but found himself overwhelmed, unable to articulate a word. Those afflicted with the K virus typically suffered a fever for 3 days, with many succumbing to the fever alone. At that precise moment, Callum's communication device unexpectedly rang again. He instinctively answered, only to be greeted by a shrill voice that resonated with menacing calm. "Mr. Callum. Your reputation precedes you," Callum tensed, biting his tongue to maintain his focus, yet the voice on the other line continued with a measured cadence. "Although we've never met, Mr. Callum, you've caused me considerable suffering. There's a proverb in your nation, reprisal for a wrong should be directed at the perpetrator. If it weren't for your intervention, military might have advanced unchecked. Your creation of the antiviral capsule thwarted what would been a swift conquest of your nation. We've been strategizing this for decades, but you've thwarted re-step. Mr. Callum, surely you must realize who I am by now, correct?" Indeed, he recognized the voice as that of Uriah Jurek's son, the mastermind of the unrest within Lost Aria, a man of ambitious designs. Callum's eyes became bloodshot with fury as he demanded, "Where is Callista? Where is she? I had no idea you were such a romantic, Mr. Callum. Initially, I dismissed her as a trivial matter, but clearly, I was mistaken," the voice taunted, followed by a sinister chuckle. Then, chillingly, the voice instructed, "Come, young lady, tell him who you are." A palpable silence ensued, yet it felt as though Callum sensed something, his voice quavering slightly. "Callista." Callista herself had never anticipated finding herself in such dire straits. Shortly after her fall, she found herself encircled. Had it not been for her injured thigh, she might have evaded capture far more adeptly. Once captured, though, she quickly resigned herself to her fate. Callum carried a significant burden, not merely of personal attachment but of broader implications. She couldn't allow herself to be used as leverage against him. Thus, even when Uriah taunted her by prodding her wound with a knife, she remained stoically silent, a testament to her resolve. Uriah's eyes gleamed with intrigue as he observed the young woman's fortitude, finding her quite fascinating. Chapter 102. A 1% chance of survival. Nevertheless, Callum was absolutely convinced that Callista had been taken captive. With a heavy heart, he, unlike anything he had felt before, shut his eyes, experiencing a surge of anger. "What are your intentions?" Callum inquired. "What do you think?" responded Uriah, his voice seething with a fury matching that of Callum's. "Due to your interference, all that I had, my followers, my funds, my strategies, They've all been obliterated. I find myself on the verge of being hunted down, like a stray dog without a shelter, stripped of everything. What do you presume I intend to do now? His tone was thick with deep, seated bitterness. The work of generations, from his father's time to the present, had been on the cusp of seizing control of Lost Aria, only to see their efforts completely dismantled by an outsider. What could his intentions possibly be? Gripping Callista's face, a cold smirk curled on Uriah's lips. I demand the munitions you possess, and one demand your life. In his desperation to flee, his desire to claim Callum's life became evident. It was the only means to extinguish the rage that consumed his heart. Callista narrowed her eyes and spoke in a raspy voice. Callum, if you attempt to rescue me, I'll kill myself first. Show some backbone. Don't forget your duties. Callum's hand clenched tightly around the communicator upon hearing Callista's voice. Callista's words ignited a fury in Uriah. In a fit of rage, he struck her, the sound of the slap traveling through the communicator and causing blood to once again trickle from the corner of Callum's mouth. Did you orchestrate the virus infections among those people earlier? Do you know the gravity of your Uriah contract? The case speaking of this drove Uriah to absolute fury. He had instructed his most trusted men to virus. With over 2,000 of his soldiers encircling and entrapping Callum's 500, he was convinced that, even if Callum survived, he would inevitably contract the disease. Who could have foreseen that Callum would remain so vigilant? Not only did he maintain his distance, but he also ensured his followers did likewise. That explosion, despite its horrific aftermath, had not even grazed Callum's skin. When the news reached him, Uriah, overcome with rage, executed several of his own men on the spot. In essence, over 2,000 of his men had perished fruitlessly, while Callum had an extraordinary stroke of luck to have survived. Finding no other option, he thought to use Callista as leverage against his adversary. Surprisingly, this tactic had some effect. Uriah then ordered his men to drag Callista away before he bellowed into the communicator, "What am I doing? I'm exacting vengeance. Weren't you deemed capable? If you could overcome influenza T, then surely the K virus would be manageable for you. But my patience has limits. If you genuinely care for this woman, then exchange your munitions and your life for her. Otherwise, he would have surely fled, rather than deliberately walking into a trap." A spark of murderous intent flared in Callum's eyes. The adversary had lost all reason, and Callum found himself at a loss for words with such a madman. "Where are you?" Suppressing his rage, he asked, each word measured and deliberate. "I'm at Mount Goldfall. You have 2 hours. If you fail to appear within that time frame, this woman's life is forfeit. Also, you may only bring 4 people with you and 4 vehicles of munitions. That should suffice, right?" "Of course," Callum responded. "It's more than enough to kill you." After the communication ended, Callum's eyes were bloodshot with fury. He tilted his head, giving a chilly glance to Ryder. "I remember that the individual we developed in Lost Aria was stationed near Mount Goldfall, correct?" Ryder, taken aback, responded, "Mr. Callum, that's our primary team in Lost Aria. Mr. Fairchild had instructed that it should not be disturbed unless the country is facing imminent destruction. Callum narrowed his eyes, a cold chuckle escaping him. This is a critical juncture for the survival of Lost Aria. If Uriah had the audacity to unleash the K-Virus once, he would not hesitate to do so again. If he does not perish, before his departure, Lost Aria will certainly face ruin. Therefore, he must not be allowed to escape with his life. Any man bold enough to harm his beloved would inevitably face dire repercussions, potentially even death. When Ryder heard these firm words, he yielded somewhat. He quickly issued a command, then addressed Callum with a noticeably stern voice. You really must make your way to the military district for the vaccine, Mr. Callum. If this truly is the case, we ought to seize even that slim 1% chance of survival. You will be safe, you must trust, however, time was a luxury Callum did not possess. Internally, Callum scoffed, his thoughts filled with disdain for Uriah, whom he saw as nothing but a dangerously ambitious madman, a murderer at heart. Uriah had set a deadline of 2 hours, but Callum knew well that if he failed to appear within that window, Uriah would not hesitate to kill Callista. The mere thought of such a grim outcome was unbearable to him. The course is set for Mount Gold Fall, Callum declared resolutely. No way. Ryder objected in alarm, Mr. Callum, there's absolutely no need for you to endanger yourself. The Shadow Assassins are already in place. You should have faith in their expertise and skills. Callum responded with icy pragmatism, Ulrich belongs to a prestigious family with centuries of influence, having built up immense wealth and power through their loyalists, enough to buy munitions capable of devastating Lost Aria. Even now, as he finds himself cornered and ready to flee, he will not be alone. Even with the Shadow Assassins present, I cannot be at peace. Mr. Callum, is Callista's life worth more than your own? What is the disparity between your status and hers? She comes from a prestigious family, true, but she is essentially an ordinary girl. How deeply are your feelings for her? Have you thought about how her actions might impact your parents? They have only you as their son. This time, Callum found himself hesitating longer than usual, wrestling with his thoughts as he weighed his duty against his personal feelings and the expectations of his family. Despite the flush of fever that colored his cheeks, his eyes glinted with a clarity and determination that belied his physical condition. Finally, with measured deliberation, he began to speak again. Elijah, set our destination for Mount Gold Fall. Chapter 103. She is gone. Mr. Callum. Ryder exclaimed, barely able to mask his disbelief. It was inconceivable to him that Callum would risk everything, even his last breath, for the sake of a woman. Callum, lips pursed in firm resolution, clarified his decision. If I go to the military district now, my chances of survival would be barely 1%. Yet, if I refrain from attempting to rescue her, her likelihood of death is almost certain. His unwavering resolve to save another seemed to soothe the scaring pain that racked his body. Never before had he felt such composure or grasped the stakes so clearly. His gaze was fixed intently to the right as he continued, I am prepared to gamble my meager chance of survival against her almost certain chance to live. Thus, we set our course for Mount Gold Fall. Meanwhile, Callista found herself confined, overhearing conversations in Turlinian outside her cell. She coolly assessed her situation from what she could gather, the tide had turned once the antidote was introduced. Consequently, Uriah had severed ties with his uncle, who continued to resist the Listerian government while Uriah planned his escape from the country. His bitterness over past failures was palpable, and it was this resentment that drove him to capture her as a way to reach Callum. The discussions outside hinted at the use of the K-virus. Fortunately, it seemed his plans had not succeeded, and Callum remained unharmed. However, a wave of unease washed over Callista. In her previous life, Callum had returned abruptly to his homeland. Given his significant role in Lost Aria, why would he return amid an ongoing war? The K-virus. Uriah. Callista furrowed her brows. In her previous life, she hadn't been able to visit Callum and knew far too little him. However, at that point, she knew she had to leave that place. They had injected her with a sedative when they confined her, but Callista possessed a unique constitution that delayed the effects of any drug. Her apparent weakness was merely a ruse. In truth, she still had the strength to break free from her bindings. Silently, she untied herself and cautiously peered through a crack in the door. Outside, two armed guards stood watch, with patrolling sentinels visible in the vicinity. The odds were against her, but she knew she had to attempt an escape within the next 2 hours, especially if Callum was indeed coming to her rescue. She needed to avoid endangering him at all costs. All her personal items had been confiscated, but she retrieved a needle hidden within her chest. The energy-locking needle, fully concealable inside her chest, now provided her with a small measure of security. Clutching the needle, she felt a renewed sense of empowerment. Meanwhile, Callum had reached Mount Goldfall and confirmed his infection with the K-virus. After a period of uncertainty, his resolve had crystallized. Callista was awaiting his rescue. Pinning his hopes on a mere 1% chance of survival simply could not measure against her safety. Weakly. Ryder knew there was no circumventing Callum. The only viable option was to have the military district dispatch an antibody as quickly as possible. However, everyone was aware that the effectiveness of the antibody decreased dramatically over time. If there was originally a 1% chance of survival, that likelihood diminished to nearly 0.001% after the 2-hour mark. Upon receiving the update, Shadow Assassins had already made their way to Mount Goldfall. Although this was their debut mission, their intent to kill was undiminished. As Callum viewed the imposing mountain peak, he let out a cold chuckle. If his end was near, then he would ensure that those who pursued him would join him in demise. Indeed, Uriah had his forces ready. His choice of Mount Goldfall was strategic, as the mountain's hollow core held potential resources for a future resurgence. If Callum brought a significant force, Uriah was undeterred. And if Callum came with only 4, their defeat would be even swifter. However, Uriah received word that Callum had continued on his path to the military district and not deviated toward rescuing Callista. It was then he realized something crucial. Callum didn't care about Callista, he never intended to rescue her. What a nuisance! I knew it, no woman would lead Callum to his demise. So, what's the point of keeping her alive? Bring that woman here. Uriah commanded. At that moment, Callista was seizing her chance to escape. She was confined in a wooden shed and had discovered a loose plank on the floor. With her bare hands, she dug at the ground beneath it, applying all her strength until the plank broke, revealing an escape route. Edie scoped out the area through a crevice and confirmed no one was directly behind the shed. After crawling out, she dashed into the surrounding forest, only to encounter guards stationed throughout. It was clear this was Uriah's secret base, likely fortified from the mountain's peak to its base. A surge of anxiety overwhelmed Callista when suddenly, a furious roar erupted from behind. She's gone. Without hesitation, Callista swiftly scaled a tree. In her previous life, Callista had found herself fleeing so frequently that she had developed a range of survival skills. Her heightened senses and swift movements enabled her to deftly navigate into the thickest parts of the tree canopy. It wasn't long before a search party arrived, led by Uriah himself, whose pale face seemed to radiate sheer fury, his blue eyes blazing with a fire of wrath. Chapter 104. A Maniac. Uriah was resolute, fueled by a fierce desire to kill the woman so thoroughly. "Boss, there's no trace on the ground, she didn't come this way," one of the searchers reported back after a thorough inspection of the area. This made sense to the searcher. A woman, fleeing in sheer panic, would undoubtedly leave numerous signs of her passage. Yet, the absence of such traces here meant she couldn't possibly be in this vicinity. Their cultural biases led them to underestimate the capabilities of Chinean women, assuming the rope's failure was due to a simple lack of thoroughness. Uriah, however, was not convinced. His teeth clenched in frustration, he shouted toward a cluster of trees, "Young lady, do you even realize? Your lover has abandoned you, he hasn't come at all. So, even if you manage to escape, it's futile, there's no one to rescue you, you can't possibly escape this mountain alone." As he yelled, he scanned his surroundings meticulously. How could a woman, forsaken by her lover, maintain her composure under such circumstances? "What a pitiful state to be in, I had thought you might be of some use. But it turns out you are utterly insignificant in Callum's eyes. Given that, there's no point in you continuing to live. If you come out now, I'll allow you a dignified death. Otherwise, I'll sell you to the most backward country to become a prostitute. You'll be abused by vile men who stink of rats. You'll never be able to reclaim your life." He continued to taunt her, believing that the combined weight of betrayal and the threat of death would break her spirit and force her to act impulsively. However, Callista was no ordinary woman and was not so easily provoked. Despite Uriah's cruel words, the idea that she had planned her escape within 2 hours to save Callum from danger now seemed absurd. He hadn't come to rescue her at all, he had left her to her fate. Still, she understood that when national issues/family duties and personal responsibilities were at stake, romantic feelings were of little consequence. Besides, her relationship with Callum had not even developed into something profound yet. Even though a coldness touched her heart, her expression did not waver. She melded with the branches and leaves, becoming nearly indistinguishable from her surroundings. Uriah waited but saw no sign of disturbance, ultimately giving up, convinced that his target was not there. Since Callum was unlikely to come, he couldn't afford to waste more time waiting for Callum's forces to potentially arrive and eliminate him. Therefore, he resolved to capture Callista before he departed. "Go, bring over a few dogs," he commanded. Callista's thigh was wounded, and although she could hide the scent of blood from humans, wild beasts were another story altogether. A shiver of fear ran through her as she glanced down at the makeshift bandage on her thigh. Sensing the imminent danger, Callista lifted her head slightly, her eyes wide. In comparison to Uriah, even the most ruthless assassins who killed without a second thought seemed like saints. The refugee camp housed 100,000 people. In a fit of rage, Uriah had condemned these 100,000 souls to a merciless fate, his cold, bloodedness knowing no bounds. Yet, his subordinates displayed remarkable loyalty, even voicing concerns for Uriah's safety during such times. Whether to activate or deactivate Plan B, it requires your fingerprint and password, boss. It would be best if you don't risk your life and exit Lost Aria safely. How could the lives of those lowly beings compare to your safety, boss? It's all right, Uriah replied, a cruel gleam in his eyes. I've already modified the system. It now requires just a password to start or stop. You all are my most loyal subordinates. So, who among you is willing to sacrifice their life for revenge? I will send a plane for you and ensure your family is well cared for. At that moment, a young boy, merely 14 or 15 years old, stepped forward, his eyes alight with unyielding fervor and admiration as he looked up at Uriah. Asterisk for the sake of your plans, Mr. Jurek's son, I am prepared to undertake the mission, he declared with determination. Excellent. Uriah commended the boy, clapping him on the shoulder as a gesture of approval. The refugee camp is close by. Soon, you'll blend in disguised as a refugee. Your destination is the large dead tree at the camp center, where you'll locate the explosive setup. The password is, he leaned in closer, lowering his voice to a whisper to share the secret code with the boy. The prospect of orchestrating such a devastating event, knowing he could observe the explosion from his escape plane due to the proximity, brought a sinister thrill to Uriah. He rationalized that if these individuals refused to submit to his rule, they deserved their grim fate. From a distance, Callista observed the exchange intently. Her exceptional eyesight and acute hearing served her well, although she couldn't hear their whispered conversation, she could read his lips as Uriah mouthed the password. Callista's lips silently mirrored his, confirming the digits in her mind. 4, 3, 7, 9. It's a 4-digit password. She desperately wished to relay this information, but a quick survey of her surroundings reminded her that she lacked any means of communication. This realization left her feeling a wave of frustration. Once he received the password, the young boy boarded a plane and swiftly departed. Suddenly, the barking of dogs pierced the air, causing Callista's muscles to tense. She then heard Uriah's laugh as he stooped to greet the approaching animals. "My dear children," these were Uriah's pet wolf dogs, notorious for their ferocity as they were raised on human flesh. Yet under Uriah's command, their savage nature was subdued. They whimpered softly and affectionately nuzzled his hand. Chapter 105. Overlapping Dangers. In no time, someone brought the rope previously used to bind Callista, still marked with her blood. Find this woman and tear her apart. Uriah commanded as he released the leash, unleashing the wolfdogs in the direction he suspected Callista had taken. Callista braced herself, familiar with the imminent danger, yet the intensity of this moment brought a sharp clarity that she was perilously close to death. This man has no regard for life. I want neither to die nor to be sold. What should I do? Just then, a gunshot rang out in the distance, bringing a momentary sense of relief to Callista, while Uriah's previously amused expression instantly darkened, his features twisting into a stormy glare. Who's there? Amidst intermittent static, voices crackled through the intercom. Boss, we've encountered a breach at Mount Goldfall. Currently, it's unclear who, but there's a sizable group. The report was cut short by screams, leaving Uriah's expression even grimmer. Among the many who sought my downfall, who could this new threat be? Callum. Impossible. He has already gone to the military district, surely. He couldn't have mustered such a force. Who then possesses such capabilities? Regardless, I can't just sit back and do nothing. Though Uriah was momentarily distracted from Callista, his nature wouldn't allow him to overlook any affront. He swiftly delegated the task to his henchman with a grave voice. If you find that woman, there's no need to report back. Just kill her on the spot. Understood. Prepare the plane. If we cannot hold them back, we need to retreat swiftly. Roger that. As Uriah's men followed the wolfdogs toward a potential hiding spot, Uriah, surrounded by his loyalists, hastily departed the scene. While Uriah was coordinating his retreat, Callista seized the moment to act. She tore off her blood-soiled bandage, skewered it onto a branch, and flung it beneath another tree to mislead the wolf dogs. She then quickly wrapped her wound with her outer garment to stem any further bleeding. Soon after, the pursuers and the wolf dogs converged at the base of the tree, where the beasts ferociously tugged at the blood soaked cloth. That woman must be nearby. Spread out and search for her, commanded the leader. While the others fanned out, the leader struggled to retrieve the cloth from the wolfdog's mouth. At that moment, Callista descended gracefully from her perch, her presence nearly imperceptible. Her movements were light and poised, and as she approached the man, the needle in her hand glinted ominously under the dim light. A frontal assault. The air was thick with the cacophony of gunfire and the harsh sounds of battle. Maintaining communication with the military district, Callum found himself at the heart of a brutal conflict. 91% Mount Goldfall was a crucial stronghold for Uriah in Lost Aria, housing his ultimate reserve of resources essential for a possible resurgence. With the dangerous K-virus in play, it was imperative for Callum and the people of Lost Aria that Uriah not escape with his life. The risk of the havoc he could wreak if left unchecked was unimaginable. Uriah had initially planned a staunch resistance, but upon realizing the overwhelming odds against him due to the superior strength of his opponent's forces, he swiftly opted to flee. Driven by both cruelty and a deep-seated fear of death, Uriah was prepared to abandon his position at the first sign of defeat. Halfway up the mountain, Callum noticed several aircraft circling overhead, clearly not there for an assault but likely arranged for an evacuation. Acting swiftly on this observation, Callum issued orders. Following his strategic directive, the team split their focus, One provided defensive cover while the other targeted the aircraft with heavy weaponry. The ensuing barrage resulted in several thunderous explosions, leading to the downing of a plane. This spectacle pushed Uriah to the edge of despair, filled with the premonition of his looming demise. Who is it? Who's out to get Mel? Who the hell were these well-trained troops and where did they spring from? Apart from Callum, who else possesses such capability? With the realization that Callum's forces were primarily positioned in the military district, Uriah mistakenly assumed that Callum would not compromise his position over a woman. Yet, who else possessed such a large reserve of munitions apart from Callum? As the evacuation plane became untenable, Uriah's only alternative was a secretive escape route through the mountain. Thanks to Callum's rapid mobilization and decisive leadership, his team's ascent up the mountain took merely an hour. Callum knew that failing to eliminate Uriah could lead to catastrophic consequences. At that moment, Ryder approached hurriedly. "Mr. Callum, the antibody," he urged, handing Callum a vial. By then, nearly 2 hours had elapsed, and the efficacy of the antibodies was highly questionable. Previously, Callum had ingested a potent antipyretic which kept him relatively coherent. Aware that administering the antibody, his late was unlikely to be Ben. The ultimate outcome of this action remained to be seen. Suddenly, a burly figure clad in black approached with urgent news. "Mr. Callum, the enemy is retreating toward the rear of the mountain," he reported. Callum's face set in a grim line. "I suspect that the interior of this mountain is hollow." Uriah would not have chosen this location as his hideout without such an advantage. "Dispatch a team with a sonar detector to confirm. We must preempt their escape routes and ensure no one escapes alive from here, official," he still proceeded. Chapter 106. An explosion. Roger that. Callum rallied his elite troops into the fray with a precise command and an astute grasp of enemy tactics. His rapid penetration of Uriah's defenses signaled that victory was tantalizingly close. It was regrettable, however, that throughout this conflict, he had yet to lay eyes on Callista. His aggression was fueled primarily by the need to corner Uriah and annihilate his remaining forces in one fell swoop. Given that Uriah was targeting his life, Callum knew that, if cornered, Uriah would undoubtedly use Callista as a bargaining chip against him. In such a scenario, even if it meant a life, for life exchange, his objective would be fulfilled. Internally, Callum felt the temperature rising, the antipyretic and subsequent antibodies seemed to have no effect. It was clear to him that he was facing his own mortality. Yet, if his end was inevitable, then he was resolute that Callista must survive at all costs. Suddenly, a sharp splat resounded as blood splattered across Callista's face. She had managed to eliminate that man in one clean strike, but dealing with the subsequent two wolfdogs proved to be more challenging. Despite her injuries, Callista's strength and quick thinking prevailed, allowing her to dispatch the beasts as well. After eliminating the threat, she quickly rose and found a place to conceal herself. Her swift actions were fortuitous. As anticipated, the sound of the wolfdog's yelp drew a man, intent on killing her. Han was instantly on high alert. They had initially split up because they believed that no matter who Sta might encounter, her demise was inevitable. However, the sudden death of one of their own, If not by Callista's hand, then perhaps an unseen assailant suggested a formidable enemy might be lurking. Yet, he harbored doubts about Callista's capability for such skilled combat. With the relentless gunfire resonating from the mountain's base, it seemed plausible that enemy forces had infiltrated their ranks with nefarious intent. As such, he never relaxed his grip on his firearm, sweeping his gaze across the surroundings, muscles tensed in anticipation of any threat. Callista remembered him well. He was the man who had brazenly harassed her in Uriah's presence, revealing his shameless and reckless nature. Clutching a gun she had just seized, she considered her options. Her marksmanship, though decent, was no match for a professionally trained soldier, especially while wounded. Engaging him with the firearm, if she failed to deliver a fatal shot, would likely result in her death. After careful deliberation, she opted to forsake the gun, instead creating a subtle, fragmented noise to draw him in. The man's ears perked up at the slightest sound, his approach cautious, not wanting to alarm any potential adversary. He moved stealthily toward the source of the noise, rounding a large tree to confront what he presumed might be an enemy. To his astonishment, he discovered not a foe, but an unexpectedly Enerlin-meached appearance. Her exposed shoulders and wide, frightened eyes could stir a mix of emotions in any onlooker. As Callista feigned vulnerability, clutching her chest as though trying to preserve her modesty, she spoke in Terlinian, suggesting a desperate bargain for her life. "As long as you don't kill me, I can fulfill any of your desires." As she spoke, her grip loosened slightly, revealing more of her supple skin. Embittered by the ongoing battle yet confident in his comrade's capabilities, the man saw an opportunity for a vile indulgence before what he assumed would be her inevitable demise. Enthralled by her beauty, which he had noticed previously, he couldn't resist approaching Callista. As he moved towards her, Callista's face showed fear and shock. Yet beneath her terrified exterior, a glint of cold resolve shone in her fingertips, where she secretly held a silver needle. While a needle was not a lethal weapon, it was enough for Callista to induce temporary paralysis, turning even the smallest opportunity to her advantage. Elsewhere, Callum had uncovered the secret entrance to a cave within Mount Goldfall. Using explosives, he gained the upper hand over Uriah. The battle had tilted decisively in his favor. Most of Uriah's men lay defeated, and the responsibility of delivering Uriah to his demise fell squarely on Callum. The cave was laden with supplies, not just munitions, food, and medicine, but also stacked with gold bars, evidently Uriah's financial reserve for a potential resurgence. Uriah's blind vengeance had clouded his judgment. Had he not been so consumed by revenge, he might utilize these resources to stage a formidable comeback from afar. Uriah's curses filled the air. Callum responded with a cold smirk, raising his hand as a dozen guns were primed and pointed toward the approaching threat. Up to this point, Uriah remained confused about his assailant's identity. The communication system had broken down, leaving him isolated and without updates on the unfolding situation outside. Therefore, he was forced to rely solely on his conjectures to piece together the clues. Logically, he knew that most of Callum's forces were stationed in the military district, deeply engaged in a fierce battle. Considering his numerous adversaries, each preoccupied with their own dilemmas, Uriah pondered who could possibly have the motive and means to target him at this juncture. Is it someone from another nation, seizing the opportunity to strike amidst my misfortune? However, the answer to his speculations became shockingly clear the moment he saw the figure before him. Callum. But isn't he supposed to be in the military district? Uriah's eyes widened in shock, a cold wave of fear washing over him as he pieced together the reality of it. Turned out that Callum, while operating a capable force in the public eye in Lost Aria, also commanded a formidable, secretive force. This realization painted Callum in a terrifying new light. Callum had been waiting at the end of the cave for some time, his posture rigid and commanding. Exuding a deadly aura reminiscent of a sword ready to strike. His presence alone was enough to chill the spine. Chapter 107. Wait for me. With a gun pointed at him, Uriah dared not resist. His men raised their hands in surrender, their fear threatening to suffocate them. As Callum's eyes fixed on Uriah, who was now cornered and desperate, his pupils narrowed, the intensity of his gaze revealing a raw, undisguised intent to eliminate any threat. Where is Callista? Callum's voice was sharp, his concern evident. Why is she not by Uriah's side? Did Uriah harm her? Uriah realized the depth of his miscalculation. In his arrogance, he had underestimated Callum's reach and resolve, assuming that Callum would not risk everything for Callista and thus disregarding her as a valuable leverage point. But Uriah, ever the schemer, quickly attempted to manipulate the situation to his advantage, despite his desperation. Let me go. Otherwise, I'll kill that woman. His voice was tinged with false bravado, clinging to the hope that Callum might be deceived by his bluff. Callum, however, maintained his composure, observing Uriah closely. After a moment, he let out a short, mocking laugh, seeing through the facade. You're not holding her captive, Callum stated flatly, his voice cutting through the tension. That means I don't have to keep you alive any longer. Uriah was taken aback, barely processing the situation before Callum's forces opened fire. In an attempt to shield himself, Uriah hid behind one of his own men. Desperate although he was hit several times, none of the bullets were fatal. The realization that he was the sole reviver amidst the carnage sent waves of terror through him. Callum's a demon. An utter demon, with that, Uriah exclaimed, "Why, you can't kill me. I've planted a bomb in the refugee camp, and I'm the only one who knows the code. If you kill me, 100,000 people will die." Callum scoffed at Uriah's claim, then approached and hoisted him from the ground with ease. Bomb? Password? Exactly, Uriah stammered. A palpable fear washed over him, his voice quivering with the weight of his impending doom. There's only half an hour left before the explosion. If you kill me, they'll all die, he cried out, his blood-stained hands desperately clutching at Callum. This was the first time Uriah found himself in such utter disarray, his pride crumbling as he yearned to beg for mercy. Let me go, and I'll give you the password right away, Callum responded with a dismissive laugh, casually releasing his grip and watching Uriah tumble to the ground. Scrambling to his feet, Uriah seemed poised to grasp at Callum's foot in a last, ditch effort to save himself. Only pure, bloods like me deserve to live. Everyone else should burn in hell. However, Callum coldly stepped on Uriah's hand before he could make another move. Even with minimal force applied, Uriah winced in pain. A man of high society, unaccustomed to physical suffering, his pampered fingers writhing under the unfamiliar strain. "Where is Callista?" Callum demanded authoritatively, towering over Uriah, who felt the full weight of his own insignificance, as if standing before a god. How could he dare to suggest that Callista was possibly dead by then? His teeth, Uriah was forced to admit her location through clenched teeth. At the peak of the gritting mountain. With a slight shift of his foot, causing Uriah to wince again, Callum smirked and pressed further, "How much of the K-virus do you still have in your possession?" Knowing the stakes, especially with 100,000 lives hanging in balance, Uriah knew better than to lie. "The K-virus is too dangerous. Apart from those already exposed, there's none left, and your uncle? He doesn't have any either." Callum probed further. "My uncle is determined, still aiming to control Lost Aria. He would never use the K-virus," Uriah confessed, understanding that infecting the populace he sought to rule would be counterproductive. Callum found Uriah's honesty in this moment both satisfying and revolting. It was clear that even among rebels, there were lines that should not be crossed, yet Uriah had seemed to have lost all sense of moral boundaries. Handing Uriah over to Ryder, who stood ready behind him, Callum gave his orders, "Send a message to Military District, inform them about the bomb. Start evacuations immediately, and get as many people AFETI within half an hour." He added, "And as for this man, keep him alive only until he gives up the password. If the bomb goes off, he dies too. Everyone else, follow me." Uriah, realizing the gravity of Callum's words, covered his hand in shock. "Callum, are you trying to kill me? Don't you care about the lives of those 100,000 people?" A sardonic smirk curled on Callum's lips. Facing his own imminent death, he had little left to lose. Moreover, he recognized the deep, seated malice in Uriah's eyes. A man of considerable influence and vengeful disposition was too dangerous to be left at large. Additionally, Uriah's reckless tampering with the K-virus was proof enough of his decayed ethical compass. To Callum, ensuring such a man never wielded power again was not just a choice but a necessity. If it meant making the hard decisions, so be it. He had always been prepared to make sacrifices, whether on the battlefield or beyond. He felt assured in his resolve, believing firmly that his decision to prioritize saving Callista was the most righteous decision he had ever made. "So, Callista, wait for me." Chapter 108. Cannot die. Now at that very moment, Callista was sprinting with every ounce of strength she had. The landscape was engulfed in flames, as though the whole mountain had been set ablaze. Vast plumes of smoke rose, casting the sky in ominous tones of crimson and black. Callista did not know the identity of those seeking to eliminate Uriah, yet she was firmly convinced of one truth: irrespective of their identity, they could not be trusted. Her continued existence was now entirely reliant on her own resourcefulness and resilience. Despite the temporary numbing of the pain from her leg wound, Callista found she could still run. Nevertheless, the reality of her injury impeded her. No matter how swift her pace, she could never outpace an unscathed assassin. She had just neutralized two adversaries, yet two more pursued her relentlessly. These remaining foes were tenacious, akin to maggots burrowing into bone, determined to bring about her downfall. She could not afford to merely sit back and accept her fate. As dizziness began to cloud her vision, a creeping dread took hold in Callista's heart. She was feeling the effects of the drug that had been administered to her earlier. Amidst this crisis, she was being actively hunted. Desperately fighting the encroaching vertigo, she sought refuge and a momentary hiding spot. Where did she go? That woman is truly remarkable. Even with her injuries, she's incredibly fast, one voice remarked in the distance. Don't wander too far, another cautioned sternly. That woman is dangerous. I just witnessed her break Ray's neck with nothing but her bare hands. She's no mere woman. Imp, Ray was always led astray by his desires. It was only a matter of time before his downfall would be brought about by a woman. Stay alert. Our communication lines are down, and we're blind to the events unfolding lower down the mountain. Once she's dealt with, we must make our escape immediately. Camouflaged within a small depression in the ground, Callista's body was smeared with mud, blending her into her surroundings. The soil provided an excellent disguise, although her head felt increasingly heavy, as if she might succumb to sleep at any minute. No, I can't let that happen. I have to pass on the password. If I don't, all those people will die, and my journey here would be all for naught. Moreover, the military district is alarmingly close to the refugee camp. If Callum's there. A bitter chuckle escaped Callista. Oh, Callista. Callum has given up on you. Though it was for a noble cause, his decision affection, it never ran as deep as he claimed. Why are you still thinking about him? Has been made such fragile by then, the two men had closed in on her location. Hidden in a muddy hollow, she observed their cautious maneuvers, her heart racing, her gaze icy and alert. Just then, a rabbit darted into the bushes nearby. The men, mistaking the sound for Callista, spun around abruptly. One stood guard while the other, armed with a gun, moved toward the bushes. This is my chance. A predatory gleam sparked in Callista's eyes. Despite her numerous injuries, if she passively awaited capture, her end would be certain. However, she now saw an opening. The man was about 20 meters away, within striking distance. She could take her shot. Callista raised her gun, aiming at the man whose back was turned, completely absorbed in his guard duty. The double vision plaguing her only worsened. She bit down on her tongue and pulled the trigger with a loud bang. Without waiting to see if she had hit her target, she swiftly rolled into another patch of grass. Despite her speed, the assassin, alerted by the gunshot, quickly traced her movements and caught up almost instantaneously. He fired two shots, both missing their target, then advanced a few steps before Callista, leaping from a tree, seized his head and disarmed him. The adversary was skilled. Though Callista was formidable, he managed to retaliate, knocking the gun from her hand and drawing his dagger. Seizing the moment, Callista lunged, needle in hand, aiming for his neck. Drained of energy, the effects of her attack were minimal, but she did not relent. Anticipating his next move, she fiercely bit into his neck. The numbness in his limbs caused by her initial assault allowed her to overpower him, and he collapsed. Reacted with a desperate thrust of his dagger. In a display of extraordinary ferocity, Callista grabbed his T-wielding hand, refusing to loosen her grip even as blood surged from the wound. The man, realizing the imminent danger, freed his other hand and began to strike her. Each blow was punishing, but Callista, driven by a primal urge to survive, clamped her teeth tighter around his neck, her grip unyielding. No matter how madly he pounded on her or pulled her hair, she remained unmoved, biting down on his neck while clinging onto the hand that wielded the dagger. It was a battle for survival with no room for a third outcome. I can't die here. My enemies, my hatred, and my very life are at stake. Fueled by these thoughts, her bite intensified, gradually diminishing the force of his blows until she had fully immobilized the hand with the dagger. Chapter 109. The most fortuitous decision of his life. He's dead, Callista murmured to herself, her tone hollow as she continued to bite him, only letting go after a lingering moment had passed. She then methodically sat upright and, with a disconcerting serenity, checked his pulse. There was no doubt about it, he was undoubtedly dead. As she sat there, her body slackened, every muscle and limb throbbing with intense pain. It was only now that the stark realization that she had indeed taken a life firmly implanted itself in her mind. Just moments before, she had been propelled by a singular, driving thought, she must not die. Thus, every action she had taken was to stave off her own demise. But now, with those who had been pursuing her lying lifeless, the vivid memories of how she had dispatched each of them flooded back to her. She had crushed the first man's skull, broken the second man's neck, shot the third, and bitten the fourth to death. Throughout it all, she exhibited not a hint of fear, no terror, nor any tremors of guilt. Suddenly, Callista found herself laughing quietly, her hands covering her face. It was evident she was laughing, yet her expression could just as easily have been mistaken for one of wailing, albeit without shedding a single tear. Have I transformed into a demon following my own tragic experiences? I've ended the lives of four individuals with such chilling precision. And even now, after their demise, I feel nothing. It's a numbness that terrifies me. A deep sadness and an overwhelming fatigue washed over her. The distant echoes of gunfire were just that distant. Surrounded by the burning jungle, she felt as though she had reverted to being the forsaken, forever hiding and fleeing, living in a perpetual state of fear. I really want to sleep. No, wait. I still have the password. Energy all but drained from her body, Callista frantically searched the dead man's body with trembling hands, but found no communication device. She staggered to her feet, but as she did, a wave of dizziness from the medication struck her, pushing her to her physical limits. Her legs buckled, sending her to one knee. Then, a gunshot echoed through the air. Callista gasped in shock, whipping her head around only to see the man she had shot earlier. Someone had delivered a fatal shot to his head, and he collapsed limply to the ground. Clearly, her earlier shot had found its mark, but had not immediately killed him. Moreover, he had just attempted an ambush. Luckily, someone had intervened on her behalf. Otherwise, her fate would have been sealed, struggling to remain conscious, Callista managed to lift her head, curious to see her rescuer. However, as the effects of the medication surged through her veins, she collapsed. Initially, she braced for impact with the ground, but, to her surprise, she found herself caught in someone's arms. Man's arm. With this, those people wouldn't have to die, there should be enough time. Could saving lives possibly balance out the sin of taking one? Overwhelmed, Callista was no longer capable of such reflections as she slipped into unconsciousness. Callum tightened his embrace around her body. The sight of someone attempting to assassinate her had made his heart stop. Almost instinctively, he had fired a shot. Thankfully, she was alive. Despite the numerous injuries she had sustained, she persisted resiliently in clinging to life. After holding her briefly, Callum suddenly released Callista with a hint of alarm and handed her over to Elijah, who stood waiting behind him. He was apprehensive that he might have already contracted the K-virus. Since Callista was injured and vulnerable, if she were to get infected, everything he had accomplished that day would have been for naught. Initially, Elijah found it rather odd. Why would Mr. Callum go to such lengths to save someone yet not even embrace them once? However, upon noticing the affection in the man's gaze, it was clear that he really cared about her. Take her back to tend to her wounds, Callum instructed. Upon hearing this, Elijah quickly breathed a sigh of relief. Mr. Callum, she's been rescued. You should seek treatment yourself. You're not just anyone. Even though the antibody wasn't administered in time, you'll definitely be okay. Callum could feel his body rapidly deteriorating, but he couldn't bring himself to voice these concerns. So, remain silent, directly dialing the military district, and communicated the crucial password to them. Ultimately, 100,000 lives were saved. Yet, who could have possibly anticipated that the hero responsible for their salvation was merely a young lady? Not only had she adeptly evaded the clutches of those who pursued her, but she had also struck back, neutralizing those who sought to cause her harm, and in doing so, she safeguarded countless lives. This heroism was unmistakably characteristic of Callista. Callum had long recognized that beneath any changes, Callista retained a fundamentally kind, hearted nature. She had merely encased her intrinsic goodness within a shell of newfound resilience and determination. Perhaps this transformation was fortuitous. He realized he might not always be there to protect her in the times ahead, but she had proven that she could indeed protect herself. He believed that the memory of Callista's visage at that moment would linger with him until his final days. Resolute and sharp, her figure set against the backdrop of a forest engulfed in flames, where the towering inferno could not even diminish the intensity of her presence. He felt immense gratitude for having been there to aid her. Surely, this would be remembered as the most fortuitous decision of his life. The bodies were incinerated on the spot. Uriah had met his demise alongside those he had dismissed as inferior. The once loyal subordinates of the Jurik Sun family, indoctrinated from a young age, were now nearly entirely extinct. It appeared that their story had reached its definitive conclusion. By the time Callista regained consciousness, she found herself back in her home country. The familiar settings enveloped her in a wave of confusion. How did I end up here? Was the bomb successfully deactivated? Who saved me back then? As she opened her eyes, the nurse overseeing her care was overcome with elation. "You're finally awake. You've been unconscious for 6 days." Without responding, Callista rubbed her temples. It was then the door swung open to reveal Benedict. "Callie, you're finally awake." Chapter 110. Mirabel is the talk of the town. He was trailed by Yelena and Quincy, who made it rather obvious that their visit wasn't merely to check in on the sick. Callista felt the urge to speak, yet the sharp pain in her throat prevented any words from forming. She could do nothing but listen attentively to Benedict's chastising tone. "I can't believe you, you know. You were supposed to be relaxing on vacation, and yet somehow you managed to get injured and tumble off a cliff. You absolutely scared me to death." "I fell off a cliff?" The realization that Benedict was oblivious to her recent perilous adventures caused Callista to exhale a sigh of relief. The implications of anyone discovering her escapades in Lost Aria were dire. It would make her a prime target for any remaining villains, ending her peaceful days once and for all. However, Quincy seemed less than sympathetic, her voice tinged with acrimony as she remarked, "Finally awake. Had you slept any longer, Mr. Callum would have surely ended up with someone." See, Callista fixed Quincy with a piercing stare, her eyes ablaze with intensity. "Quincy. Stop spouting such nonsense, your sister has just awakened." Benedict interjected with a tone of concern. Yet, it was evident that Quincy was agitated. Far from holding back, she only raised her voice further. "Am I clearly speaking nonsense? It's the talk of the town. Everyone is buzzing about how enamored Mirabel is. Despite Lost Aria being at war, she rushed to see Mr. Callum as soon as she got back. And when Mr. Callum got injured, she was the only one allowed to care for him. No one else was permitted near him. If that doesn't tell you something, what will?" Sudden stab of pain pierced Callista's heart. "You said Mirabel went to Lost Aria?" Callista's voice was raspy and strained, each word carefully enunciated. "Exactly. Just a week ago, Mirabel went to Lost Aria. Then she returned alongside Mr. Callum. Now, with Mr. Callum injured, she's the one tending to him. I'm telling you, your fiancé title is in jeopardy." "Quincy!" Benedict exclaimed, attempting to halt her tirade. But it was too late for Callista. 7 days prior, the very day she had been captured and when Callum had abandoned her, had he left her to fend for herself against life, threatening dangers while he was romancing Mirabel? This thought had scarcely crossed her mind when suddenly, she spat out a mouthful of blood. "Callum betrayed me." Once this idea took root, Callista found herself grappling with a depth of hatred she had never known, a bitterness that even surpassed the resentment she harbored toward Quincy. "Callie!" Benedict cried out in shock. He quickly summoned a doctor. The doctor arrived promptly, first ensuring that all the relatives were ushered out before he began to examine Callista, carefully wiping away the blood. Callista sank back onto the bed, and in that brief respite, her thoughts regained a semblance of clarity. No, something must have been overlooked. Callum isn't one to play games. He's forthright, driven by his likes and dislikes, and exceedingly tenacious. He pursued me so relentlessly before, and I find it hard to believe that his feelings could have shifted so abruptly. Perhaps there's something I'm unaware of. Regardless, I'm sure I'll find out the truth once I confront him. Miss Stafford, your current condition is quite precarious. We urge you to steer clear of any severe emotional disturbances. Should you fail to comply, your condition might deteriorate further, complicating our efforts to assist you, the doctor advised with a stern tone. Callista looked at him, her icy gaze briefly causing the doctor to falter, a rare occurrence in his career. I understand, she responded, her voice still hoarse but significantly steadier than before. Thank you, doctor. I will cooperate fully with the treatment. She shifted her gaze away, allowing the doctor to breathe a sigh of relief, feeling as though he had narrowly averted a crisis. He promptly gave some instructions, left a nurse in charge, and made a hasty exit. Callista cast a puzzled look at them. Why do I sense this eerie feeling of being feared? What she did not realize was that her aura had grown markedly more intense after personally taking multiple lives. Her cold, detached gaze now carried an unmistakable sense of danger, instilling deep scat fear in anyone it landed on. At that moment, Benedict Rhee entered, his face marked with concern. Tolerated his chatter for a while before finally speaking up. Dad, it's nothing serious. I just coughed up some blood, that's all. I need to rest now. When you leave, please inform the doctor that only Mrs. Stafford to attend to me. There's no need for a nurse to be present constantly. If anything arises, I'll ring the bell initially. Benedict was hesitant to agree, but recognizing it was the first time Callista had sought to be closer to Yelena, he saw it as a positive development. After all, they were family and there was no need to perpetuate any strife. Upon hearing this, Yelena's face lit up with a smile. Absolutely, I'll take good care of Callie. Oh, Callie, you've had me so worried. Recently, after Yelena's return from the Langley residence, she had kept a modest profile. Benedict felt a tinge of guilt since the Langley family had returned their shares. His attitude toward her had noticeably softened. When Yelena realized there was an opportunity to enhance their relationship, she eagerly agreed, fearing Benedict might reconsider. Quincy had departed earlier. School was already in session and she still hadn't secured a mentor eventually. Benedict consented. All right, Yelena, please ensure you take meticulous care of Callie this time, understood? If she becomes a bit irritable, as an elder, you need to demonstrate some patience. Yelena internally scoffed. Callista's tantrums are minor. The last incident at the Langley residence was a significant. Callie. Benedict cried out in shock. He quickly summoned a doctor. The doctor arrived promptly, first ensuring that all the relatives were ushered out before he began to examine Callista, carefully wiping away the blood. Callista sank back onto the bed, and in that brief respite, her thoughts regained a semblance of clarity. No, something must have been overlooked. Callum isn't one to play games. He's forthright, driven by his likes and dislikes, and exceedingly tenacious. He pursued me so relentlessly before, and I find it hard to believe that his feelings could have shifted so abruptly. Perhaps there's something he's unaware of. Regardless, I'm sure I'll find out the truth once I confront him. Ms. Stafford, your current condition is quite precarious. We urge you to steer clear of any severe emotional disturbances. Should you fail to comply, your condition might deteriorate further. Complicating our efforts to assist you, the doctor advised with a stern tone. Callista looked at him, her icy gaze briefly causing the doctor to falter, a rare occurrence in his career. I understand, she responded, her voice still hoarse but significantly steadier than before. Thank you, doctor. I will cooperate fully with the treatment. She shifted her gaze away, allowing the doctor to breathe a sigh of relief, feeling as though he had narrowly averted a crisis. He promptly gave some instructions, left a nurse in charge, and made a hasty exit. Callista cast a puzzled look at them. Why do I sense this eerie feeling of being feared? What she did not realize was that her aura had grown markedly more intense after personally taking multiple lives. Her cold, detached gaze now carried an unmistakable sense of danger, instilling deep scat fear in anyone it landed on. At that moment, Benedict Rhee entered, his face marked with concern. I tolerated his chatter for a while before finally speaking up. Dad, it's nothing serious. I just coughed up some blood, that's all. I need to rest now. When you leave, please inform the doctor that only Mrs. Stafford to attend to me. There's no need for a nurse to be present constantly. If anything arises, I'll ring the bell. Initially, Benedict was hesitant to agree, but recognizing it was the first time Callista had sought to be closer to Yelena, he saw it as a positive development. After all, they were family and there was no need to perpetuate any strife. Upon hearing this, Yelena's face lit up with a smile. Absolutely, I'll take good care of Kalik. Oh, Callie, you've had me so worried. Recently, after Yelena's return from the Langley residence, she had kept a modest profile. Benedict felt a tinge of guilt since the Langley family had returned their shares. His attitude toward her had noticeably softened. When Yelena realized there was an opportunity to enhance their relationship, she eagerly agreed, fearing Benedict might reconsider. Quincy had departed earlier. School was already in session and she still hadn't secured a mentor. Eventually, Benedict consented. All right, Yelena, please ensure you take meticulous care of Callie this time, understood? If she becomes a bit irritable, as an elder, you need to demonstrate some patience. Yelena internally scoffed. Callista's tantrums are minor. The last incident at the Langley residence was a significant debacle, yet Callista had emerged unscathed. Managing this cunning B**TCH is becoming increasingly challenging. Despite this, she replied with a confident grin. Don't you trust me to manage things? Didn't you mention that work is piling up at the office? Go ahead, I'll handle everything here.